You and I together kicking off a brand new month with a very busy show midweek Wednesday, November 1st, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We featured breaking news regarding a court-ordered redo of this past September's Bridgeport Democratic mayoral primary. We featured analysis from Only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi and Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and editor Dan Haar. And we normally check in with this gentleman at the 5 o'clock hour every Thursday, but we will be fully ensconced in our annual Bridgeport Rescue Mission Radiothon all day tomorrow from 5 a.m. till 6 p.m. So I figure, hey, let's have him on today, because I think something happened a little while ago during the program here. From onlyinbridgeport.com, Lenny Grimaldi. Lenny, a new primary. How about that?
Why are you calling me a gentleman? What is going on with you?
Because you are, at least to me, you are. Now, you know, listen, I'm not delving into your private life here. So,
hold on a second opinion. Yes, it's a new primary.
Yes. So does this, let me ask you this, Lenny, to kick us off here. Are you surprised?
No, I'm kind of in between. You know, who the heck knows what a judge is going to do? And isn't it the fascination about the life we live within courthouses and judges making decisions? You go back and forth. Could it go this way or could it go that way? So Judge William Clark ruled just like a little bit over an hour ago, posted on the judicial website, is going to be a new Democratic primary for mayor. And I'm going to read, if it's okay, because I'm writing as I'm talking.
Sure.
On my site.
Sure.
So based on the totality of evidence presented, the court finds that the plaintiff, right, John Gomes, has met his burden of proof and established, quote, substantial violations in the placing of absentee ballots into drop boxes by partisans who are not designated to handle such ballots. So basically, it comes down to this. There are a bunch of campaign operatives who put a whole bunch of absentee ballots in drop boxes, which, in the judge's opinion, changed the outcome of Mayor Joe Ganim's 251-vote primary win in September. So what does this mean? Now you know why I'm a little schizophrenic, right? So next Tuesday, a general election will take place, right? So here's what I apologize. As I'm speaking, I'm writing, right?
Okay, yeah.
How will Judge Clark's decision impact the psyche of city voters? There's going to be a general election next Tuesday because the Supreme Court has ruled that a lower court cannot change a general election date.
Mm-hmm.
So on Tuesday, Mayor Joe Ganim is going to be on the Democratic line, right? David Hearst, the Republican line. Gomes has the Bridgeport Independent Party line. And John Lamont Daniels, petition candidate.
Okay.
So if I've written, Gomes is playing with House money. So let's suppose Ganim wins Tuesday.
Yeah.
He's going to have another bite of the apple, assuming the Connecticut Supreme Court, and I dare say the city, the Ganim side, is going to appeal this ruling. He's going to have another bite of the apple, right? And now we get into, when will another Democratic primary take place? Fire up the snowplows, probably December. Right? I'm saying this because this has never happened before. I mean, it's just complete new territory. So, if Ganim wins the general next Tuesday and the redo primary, it's over.
Sure.
So on Tuesday, let's suppose Gomes wins. It's over because there's no reason for a redo, right? But then if Ganim wins the general, then loses the primary redo, there's still another general election because Ganim occupies a ballot in the new movement party line.
Oh, man.
Now, it's even worse legally. What if Lamont Daniels wins the general election on Tuesday? Then what? Because he's not a party in any of this kind of stuff. So I'm kind of like talking to you off the top of my head. Because there's so many crazy unknowns right now.
This is, Lenny, this is like bracketology. You know, when you get to March Madness and the 64 teams.
Yes. Like,
it's just really.
You said it better than me. Yeah, yeah. It's as I mean, I've been doing this, what? You and I have been doing this a long time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
40-plus years, maybe a little bit more than you, but this is new legal territory,
yeah,
depending upon what happens. So, like, you know, for the voters of the city of Bridgeport and for the outlying communities that just come in, so just, like, we come into Bridgeport because it's kind of interesting entertainment.
Yeah.
There's going to be a general election on Tuesday, but it's not over.
Yeah, and you know, Lenny, I mentioned last hour, the interesting part then becomes, and I think no matter who wins, Lenny, on Tuesday, or any redo primary, or a redo after that, there's a bigger issue here. Not next Tuesday, but in November of 24, I believe there's this statewide question, right, on the ballot as to whether or not voters want to allow the General Assembly to make, you know, permanent changes in Connecticut's voting laws to essentially allow what we have now, no excuse absentees, that was done, you know, in the purvey of the COVID-19 pandemic. And then, well, and again, yeah, you know, Lenny, we've had high-ranking Democrats saying, hey, we don't have to go nuts with all these rules. It's only Bridgeport. Well, now, Lenny, you see this. And don't think people around the state, Lenny, I think are even more attuned, saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm a big fat no on that change the Constitution question unless I see something good come out of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a great point. So this whole case is based on these drop boxes.
Yeah.
So during COVID, General Assembly, Secretary of State decided, you know what, because people are afraid to go to the polls, let's have these drop boxes. So what we're seeing now is bringing into question these drop boxes. So for your audience, City of Bridgeport has four designated drop boxes where people can drop their absentee ballot in those boxes because they don't want to go to the polls.
Yeah.
They don't want to vote, go to the in-walk voting locations. So that's what this kind of is all about. And you've had, it's a strange configuration because this is all new. Because of COVID, these drop boxes were put in place, and certainly, you know, political operatives took full advantage of, all right, we have these drop boxes, so let's just drop a whole bunch of things. Judge Park said, you know what? There's just so much of this stuff.
Yeah.
Before me, I have to do a new primary.
Yeah, and you always emphasized, Lenny, you emphasized that there was a level here, right, that the judge or a judge in this case had to see, and apparently he saw it.
Yeah, he did. He did. Here's the thing. You know, it's the funny thing, you know. So, yes, you had two Joe Ganim supporters who took a stand. And under oath, I don't blame them because they could have bigger issues testifying in this case because there could be criminal, you know, investigations going on, and they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they invoked their privilege, Fifth Amendment privilege, not to testify. But funny thing about this whole thing, I'm reading as we're talking. So Joe Ganim takes a stand, and he is a defendant in this case. So here's what the judge writes. Mr. Ganim was correct. His testimony that where he confirmed that he advised campaign staff to follow the do's and don'ts related to absentee ballots and to that message from his campaign advisors was don't touch ballots.
Yeah.
Right? And so this judge is saying the preponderance of people touching ballots that, forgive me, I made the mistake. All this is on video, right? You have these drop boxes that have security surveillance that is there. And so the defendant, I mean, I apologize, the plaintiff, John Gomes, and his lawyer, Bill Boss, introduced all this evidence of these political operatives dropping, stuffing ballots into these boxes that under surveillance, right? So that this is the first time in Connecticut court election history that video surveillance was used on this level. And the Gomes campaign, led by Bill Bloss, who's an excellent lawyer, said, listen, there's just too much of this. You have to overturn it. Because you cannot figure out, you know, who really won this case based on all this stuff going on. And so, by the way, you know, Judge Clark said, yeah, I agree with the plaintiff. Now, probably this is going to be appealed by the city of Bridgeport to the Supreme Court. And how long that process is going to take, who knows? I know this much. There's going to be a general election next Tuesday, and it's not going to be over unless John Gomes wins. So if John Gomes wins the general election next Tuesday, it's over. Because he has here's the reason why. People say, why? Because he's not harmed. He's won, right? He's no longer harmed by losing the primary because he's won the general. Now, if Joe Gannon wins the general, there's going to be another primary, right? So that's the thing. And again, the thing legally, because I'm saying, what if Lamon Daniels wins the general election?
Oh, my God.
Because he's not a party to this.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
That creates a whole new legal wrinkle because Lamon Daniels running as a petitioning candidate. I wish in the city of Bridgeport I could be saying that what if David Hurst, the Republican, wins?
But yeah.
You know the reality, right?
No, I know the reality.
I don't put him in the equation, but Lamon Daniels, Lamon Daniels is financially, the last week, is in better shape than Gannon
and and it could be. And there could be a protest vote, too. Lenny, we got to run things. Now, listen. Last time you said you didn't do it. You wouldn't want to do it. But if from my producer and news guy here, Chris, says that CNN, Fox, and MSNBC are already on hold. So they want to talk to you about, you know, coming on primetime.
Not doing it.
Come on, man.
I love Uncle Paulie. I'm only in for you.
All right, Lenny.
I already turned them down.
All right, Lenny. Be good. We'll talk. Thanks, man. Lenny Grimaldi there. And the website, of course, and the blog is onlyinbridgeport.com. Well, our interesting day continues right here at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. We will get back to those phones with any trailing thoughts you may have. First, though, good to check in with Dan Harris. We do midweek Wednesday every time at this segment, Hearst Connecticut Media. And that, Mr. Har, good afternoon. You have some stuff to write about, you and your folks at Hearst. Not a slow day today.
Busy day in the Gannon Beat.
That's all right. Let's start out with a story one of two. A judge, Dan, says there's enough here. We need a new primary. What are your thoughts on that?
It's no surprise that the judge found that there was enough of a discrepancy to raise questions about the outcome of the case because it was only 251 votes between him and John Gomes. The question is, how do you find a remedy that does not disenfranchise voters? And the answer is you don't, because now all the people who voted in the first election who, for whatever reason, don't vote in the next election will be disenfranchised. Right. So the other problem is you got an election on Tuesday. Right. Yeah. What's going to happen in the election? No one's going to show up. Why would you vote in an election that doesn't matter? You have the general election first, then you have a primary. Well, if Gannon wins the general election and he loses the primary, they go back to another general election.
And then you also have, as one of my previous guests said, the specter of, you know, Lamon Daniels, who's still kind of, I don't know, Dan, hanging around here. Does he get a sympathy vote? Is he playing with house money here?
Yeah, well, when you say a house money, I mean, he's just going to have to wait out the general election that counts.
Yeah.
But once again, everybody who votes for him is disenfranchised. So So what are you going to say about that? You know, the bottom line is that they should have figured this out before the general election, had a primary before the general election, and been done with it. They didn't seem to be in a big rush to get this thing done. They let the days go by when they didn't have a court hearing. They should have made this an emergency, and they didn't.
So, Dan, obviously, and we had rumblings of this from the 2019 go-around. I mean, the big difference here, you may agree or disagree with me. I mean, it's to me, if that video didn't exist, none of this may have happened. I mean, it would have been arguments and hearsay, but, boy, that video, to me anyway, made all the difference.
The whole thing turned on the video, and that's why it's no surprise that Mayor Ganim this morning on WNPR said he would just assume see the boxes not be there, which is a little bit of a surprise since the Republicans are calling for the boxes to be removed and the Democrats are saying, oh, no, we need the boxes because that's part of democracy. So we can sort that out. But it's an irony that the Democratic mayor of Bridgeport is saying, I would just assume not have the boxes. But, yes, you're quite right. The videos did show 400 and some 40 drop offs with 1200 ballots. So that's a 3-to-1 ratio. And that's no good. And away we go for another election. So hang, you know, fasten your seatbelts.
Yeah.
And don't forget that the SEC, the State Elections Enforcement Commission, today publicly launched an investigation as to whether Mayor Joe Ganim lives in Bridgeport.
Yeah, I saw that on one side, and I immediately, right, Dan, you look at your, now you obviously saw it come down, but I'm sitting here going, are you kidding me? But I guess there was some sort of complaint filed, and we're going to have another investigation here.
That's right, and it's not an automatic that they would accept the investigation. The SEC, in order to vote, the commission, in order to vote to launch an investigation, has to agree that there is a credible claim or complaint. Not to say that they're agreeing that he doesn't live in Bridgeport, but they don't just automatically say we're investigating. They have to agree that there's a credible complaint. So, you know, there you go. And of course, Mayor Ganim said to our reporter today that that's just a political nonsense. Of course he lives in Bridgeport, and away we go. It's the state's largest city.
And the most entertaining, too. Dan Haar here, Hearst Connecticut Media. Okay, put those aside because those stories will be active for at least a few more weeks. A couple of other things, Dan. I know you wanted to talk about these lawsuits with PFAS, P-F-A-S. We've heard that term. What's that about?
PFAS is the chemical that's put into plastic that makes it work. It makes it flexible, for example, and makes it protective and all kinds of other things. And like a lot of chemicals that go into plastic, it's found to be carcinogenic after a number of years. And right now, on top of a number of other lawsuits, we have three customers of the two commercial water companies in Connecticut, Aquarion and Connecticut Water, suing those companies for knowingly delivering water with PFAS in it. I should hasten to add that both companies are operating well within state and federal laws. So it really becomes a lawsuit or a dispute about public policy. Should the state tighten those regulations? And the answer is yes, and they will next year. You can expect to see that.
All right. Now, Dan Haar, I did notice this story interesting, I guess. Now, I don't partake. A lot of people I know do. But in our legal marijuana, our adult illegal recreational, Dan, as they say, consumption, some of the limits as to what you can buy or forecast what to go up now?
Yeah, you're just asking for a friend, right?
Yeah, he's over there, yeah. I'm asking Dan Haar right now.
You don't buy him. You're just asking
for
a friend.
No, Dan, come on. I'm as pure as the driven snow. You know that. Come on.
December 1st, your friend will be able to buy a half ounce of flower, a.k.a. buds, and that's up from a quarter ounce today, or equivalent amounts in the vape and tincture and edibles. So that amount goes up. What makes it interesting is that the market is growing and the number of cultivators and manufacturers is not necessarily keeping up. The hope is that as the demand grows in Connecticut, if demand grows in Connecticut, mm-hmm. as the number of dispensaries grows or retail locations, as the case may be, the market for cultivation and manufacturing keeps up. And it's a very delicate thing. You know, very, very rarely does a regulated market get born. And so you're having to say, here's how many licenses we're going to give out.
Yeah.
If you give out too few licenses, the market doesn't work. If you give out too many licenses, the players in the markets, the proprietors, the owners of those companies, fail. And you don't want to see either one happen. And so it's a balancing act. And the raising of the rate of the amount you can buy is part of that balancing act.
Yeah, and every state that goes through that kind of takes a year, two or three to shake that out. Finally, Dan Haar, I am a sucker for polls. I know they're usually, as everybody says, if you're a politician, it's just a snapshot in time, which it is. But again, Governor Ned Lamont doing quite well in morning consult, and the man of the White House, not so much.
Yeah, we know that Lamont is popular because even though this is just one poll, he has consistently been, since COVID, since his great performance in COVID, he's consistently been in the low 60s, and that's where he is in this poll, 61% approval. That puts him as the eighth most popular governor in the country and the second most popular Democrat after whoever is the Democratic governor of Hawaii,
yeah,
whose name I forget.
Mm-hmm.
And so there you are. He obviously could be governor as long as he wants, and I would imagine this is his last term, but you don't know. He seems to be enjoying himself. Biden is not doing well at all, even in Connecticut, with 54% disapproving of his performance. That's not good for a president in a Democratic state like this one.
Yeah, and Dan, you know, I've always said to my listeners here, the number that you see, particularly of Governor Lamont, you know, just 31% disapproval, that shows me, and it's been borne out in the numbers, that he is getting approval on the flip side from some Republicans. And Dan, I think, I don't know how you feel about this, I think that currently as we talk in the year 2023, it's kind of the formula for a good, solid governor of Connecticut. Of course, he's going to be very liberal on social policy. We know that. But the whole dollar and cents thing, I mean, I saw an article a couple of months ago. It might have been in Newsweek or the National Review. And I think the headline was something like, hey, don't look now, but the Democratic governor of Connecticut is a Republican when it comes to fiscal policy.
Well, he's a moderate Republican when it comes to fiscal policy.
Yeah.
He's certainly willing to invest many, many ways in many, many places. He's not like Governor DeSantis in Florida on fiscal policy, where he just simply doesn't want to spend money on services.
Mm-hmm.
This is Governor Lamont, who's, yeah, you sure, you could say he's a Rockefeller Republican. And he almost has Rockefeller money, so that makes sense. By the way, I want to correct myself. I said Biden was 54% disapprove. It's 51% disapprove of Biden and 46% approve. Not good numbers, but not quite as bad as I just said.
All right, Dan, continue giving us the update there in our next get-together regarding the Ganim situation, because that's the gift that keeps on giving. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, thank you. We'll chat next week.
We'll be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that. All right, yeah. Joe Biden, 51% disapproval. I say, not good. Not good. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Before we go to the break, and we'll open it up to open phones the rest of the way. I started the show wondering when people were going to understand, and with the frustration I have in my business, I'm more of an opinion guy right now. But I do have a journalism degree, and I do some work on the side where I'm not allowed to have an opinion. I say it straight down the middle. But kudos again today to a guy that is the National Security Council spokesman. That, of course, is a retired Admiral John Kirby. And here is another member of my business, Mary Bruce, who covers the White House for ABC. And this just infuriates me. Here's somebody worried about, well, you know, are the Israelis going overboard a little bit? You know, we're not worried about Hamas at all with the general mainstream networks, save for Fox and Newsmax and a few others. And listen to the way John Kirby very gently tells her, you've got to be kidding me, Mary, with this question.
And the IDF enters this sort of next phase of this conflict, you know, the president again urged Prime Minister Netanyahu to act in a manner consistent with international humanitarian law. Does the president still feel, or does he feel that Israel is abiding by the rules of war?
Without getting into reacting to events on the ground in real time, which we're just not going to do, this is a conversation we consistently have had with our Israeli counterparts, and as you rightly note, it was part of the discussion yesterday with the Prime Minister, and you heard the Prime Minister today speaking in Tel Aviv about the efforts that they're undertaking to try to avoid civilian casualties. And I think that they certainly are making that effort. It doesn't mean that there haven't been civilian casualties. Tragically, there have been many, thousands of them. But unlike Putin in Ukraine, and unlike what Hamas did on October 7th, killing civilians is not a war aim of the Israeli Defense Forces. Their war aim is to go after Hamas terrorists.
Terrorists, I might add.
That are using innocent Palestinians as human shields.
But is the president concerned that Israel is going to break the rules of war? And if not, why does the president feel the need to repeatedly bring this up in, it seems, every conversation that he has with him?
Because it's something that even the prime minister brings up in the conversations, that it is, they both recognize that as democracies, it's important to abide by the law of war and to protect innocent life and to try to minimize civilian casualties. It's not a lecturing. It's a reminder from two leaders of two vibrant democracies that this is what separates us from folks like Hamas.
You don't think that FDR and Churchill had the same sorts of discussions? You don't think they talked about civilian casualties and they were concerned? I swear there are people in my business who sound like they were born 10 minutes ago.